This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Welcome to Hey YA, a book riot podcast covering young adult literature, from great new books to favorite classic reads, from new stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations. Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. I'm your host, Erica Ezzafetti, and I'm joined today by Book Riot's managing editor, Vanessa Diaz. We are recording on April 22nd. Vanessa, how are you?
Hello. I love pretending that we haven't just talked.
Like I know. Like, oh my God. Like, do you, like... How are you doing? We were just talking for like 30 minutes.
It's great. We're recording a little later than we usually do because life has been lifing, but it's great to be with you on this Monday. Well, for me, morning still, for you, afternoon.
Yeah. It's always a good time.
Talk about some things.
A fun time. Now, we're going from talking, me mentioning fun times to non-fun times.
That is a really beautiful way to summarize. Well, first, let's tell people what the good stuff we're going to talk about so that they know what's coming today. Since it is still April, we are here to talk about poetry. So we're going to be talking about some YA novels in verse and poetry and all things of that nature, which is great because I have a hard time like remembering to pick up poetry, even though I always enjoy it when I do. So this was a nice way to get me back to some stuff I'd abandoned a little bit. And like, yeah, it's going to be really fun to talk about that.
It will be fun. And yeah, I don't know why I'm like, I like the idea of poetry. I like the idea of poetry. I also actually like poetry. That's not what I should say in this episode. But I, like you, also forget to pick it up sometimes and forget to read all of the poetry collections that I have. And I've noticed that YA poetry, I feel like there are a lot more novels in verse that are YA, or like they're easier to find. I don't know if you've noticed that, but as opposed to adult,
definitely
ones.
Came to mind easier than I could think of adult ones, although they don't exist, so we're not gonna sit here and pretend like I haven't done, you know, exhaustive research, but all the ones that I quickly wrote down for myself without trying were all YA, so this felt like a very natural fit.
Yes. So we're going to get into that, and that's going to be a lot of fun. But first, there was some mess over the weekend, honey.
Mess doesn't even...
Do you have
begin to describe this.
Do you want to talk about it? I feel like I read it. I might have some of the details wrong. I mean, also, it's fine not to have all the details.
Yeah, I guess what we can say, I myself had a very eventful weekend, and so I was sort of checking into social media like very sporadically for distraction reasons, and my Twitter, because that's what we're always calling it, was 100% overrun by this news about an author, agent, maybe person that goes by many aliases, including Freydis Moon, Taylor Barton, Taylor Brooke, Jupiter Wise, and I've seen a list that is longer even than that. It's basically been a person like pretending to be other people, and which is already bad enough, but egregiously pretending to be like queer brown and black writers, and like has taken deals and like just been really shady online under all of these different aliases. It is much more complicated than Erica or I think are like fully prepared to flesh out and don't need to, but we wanted to talk about it because it does affect the YA space. And first of all, don't do this. <It's>, unfortunately, not like, even like the first case of this we've seen. Like, so that's the big takeaway. This is why they pay me the big bucks. Don't do this. But also, just there's so many fantastic brown and black and queer and all of, you know, intersections of the above authors that you can support right now. We have plenty of links that we'll maybe even drop a few into the show notes, because this, just don't do this. It's so awful. It's already hard enough in the publishing game, and then you see stuff like this. And the fact that, again, it's not the first time is really disheartening, because it feels like it's just too easy to get away with. And that's my hot takeaway for that.
Yeah. And to be fair, I don't know that this person is not queer, so I don't know if they were masquerading.
That is, yes.
So absolutely. I just want to put that out there. They definitely were masquerading as a person of color, brown person, a Latine person.
Great point.
But I'm not sure if they might actually be queer. I'm not sure on that.
No, that's true.
I had to send the Twitter thread where they did a takedown. Honey, I don't know. First of all, it is 2024.
Oh, yeah.
The year of our Lord, Beyonce. You don't know that people have receipts? People are part-time FBI agents on this internet, on Blue Ivy's internet. Mm-hmm. And y'all keep playing in Blue Ivy's face by putting these falsehoods, fairy tales, and fallacies online.
And this, Erica, what she's referring to is the fact that there are not just screenshots, which is already enough, but there is a Google Doc.
Where they've all been compiled.
Yeah. And it's clear, like, several of the people who finally came up and spoke up about, or came forward, pardon me, and spoke up about this had been compiling and taking their time with it out of fear that basically, like, the internet would do them. You know, they're like, no, listen, like, this has been affecting me for reasons. There's just so much, like, really, really reprehensible behavior involved in so many ways, like, all up and down this situation. Yeah. It's just bad. It's so bad.
Obviously it's bad. I say that because of what I'm about to say next. It's bad, but it's also, like, creepy. It's also like you're putting on someone else's skin.
Yeah, no, it's
really, and it's just creepy. Like, ew. You and know that that meme, ew, brother, ew. What's that, brother?
Yeah.
It's giving me that.
Yes, I do indeed. Ick. We would also like, or at least I would like to add, that this is in no way going to be used, at least I am demanding it not be used as a justification to come for people who do write under pen names, or you know, who, like, aren't forward with their identities. Like, a lot of that is a measure of protection, and as again, you can see, because of how terrible people are on the internet, like, there's valid reasons for all that. You can absolutely have a pen name and not be masquerading as something that you're not. And then using that specifically to gain, like, you know, clout and infiltrate spaces that are not for you. And that people who already, like, don't get enough opportunity.
Use a pen name if you want, but not a pen ethnicity or a pen race. Please.
Please. Don't.
Thank you.
Don't Thanks. Use pen races. Don't really use a excellent pen race. Note to end on.
All right.
So again, well, in conclusion, don't do this.
In conclusion, don't do this. On a less terrible note, if you're looking to elevate your reading life, Tailored Book Recommendations is here to help with handpicked recommendations. You can tell our bibliologist at Tailored Book Recommendations about what you love and what you don't. You can get your recommendations via email or receive hardcovers or paperbacks in the mail. And with quarterly or annual plans available, TBR has something for every budget. Plans start at just $18. You can visit mytbr.co to subscribe today. It only takes a few minutes. Again, that's mytbr.co. So yeah. Now, before we get to the poetry and spice and everything nice, let's hear from our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have 7 great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's, like, the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number six. So if he is to have seven great loves, does that mean his time with Irina is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. Let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
Okay. Poetry, novels, and verse. So, okay. Before this.
Yes, tell us.
Before this, I have a question. Yeah. Before we were compiling these lists, our, you know, respective lists, when was the last poetry book you read? Like, when did you finish it?
Poetry itself, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is like a thing that I often like forget to reach for as often as I should. But this is also going to be a plug for another type of media. But if you are not listening to the Vibe Check podcast, it is great. It is hosted by Sam Sanders, Zach, whose last name I am, of course, blanking on right now, but also Saeed Jones. And Saeed Jones, you may recognize as a poet and writer of books like How We Fight for Our Lives. And the book is, or the podcast, I'm sorry, is not like ostensibly about poetry. It's just a discussion among three like best friends about all things. Like they talk about culture, about politics, about, you know, media, etc. But they always do a section where they talk about kind of like talk about some things that are like helping your vibe. And Saeed very regularly recommends poetry and will read a poem. And that has been my, so I'd say maybe in the last like 6 months, my check to go and seek out at least that, either the poem that he's talking about on the episode. So like there's, you know, a lot of poetry that's available online, like at all times. You don't necessarily have to like pick it up as part of a collection. Mm-hmm. But sometimes he does recommend stuff from really excellent collections. So this is sort of a long-winded way of saying that, like, I have started to reach for it much more in the last 6 months. But again, it's sometimes like a piecemeal going to seek out like a specific poem, and having read like a book like start to finish that was poetry. I reread Bright Dead Things by Ada Limón recently because she was on that podcast. She's our poet laureate. But that I only did that like 3 to 4 weeks ago. And before that, it had been a bit since I read like an entire book that was either of a collection of poems or novels and verse.
I'm bad with like reading an entire collection. I have plenty of them on my
shelf. That's like, there's a good reason for that though, right? Like,
yeah, they're dense maybe. Like I'll read one poem, then I'll be like, oh, okay, let me sit with that. I'll be intending to read an entire collection, but I don't always. I'll say the last time I came into contact with like poetry and was reading it and stuff, I'm a mentor with Girls Write Now, which is a nonprofit organization that connects like gender minorities, so like girls, like femme presenting, also non-binary people, with mentors if they're interested in writing. So we have like sessions we have to sign up for as like part of the program, you know.
Sure.
And I've signed up for some. And so that it also makes you write poetry. And I'm like, oh, girl, I don't know if y'all want that now.
I mean, like, I don't know. And the hat went too bad. Snap.
Bars. Let me snap for you. Can you hear my snapping?
I promise I'm not that terrible, but that is absolutely what my nervous brain would make me. Yeah. I would. Yeah. Whenever someone's like, do something poet. I'm like, and then you see the words that these poets put on the page and you're like, oh, wow. Like poetry can really be anything. Which. Yeah. Is like a takeaway that I definitely wanted to spend like a little bit of time on. again, so yeah, you should actually just go look for this episode. It's very recent. I think I said 3-4 weeks ago, but I think it may at this point only be like 2 or 3 weeks ago that it came out. It's a conversation with Ada Limón on Vibe Check, where they ask her a little bit about like, what does it mean to be the poet laureate? And like, why is poetry important? And like, what do you wish more people knew about poetry? And these are maybe not new lessons, but they might be new to you, or like maybe you just need to hear it again. It was really, really interesting to hear her talk about her craft and how she approaches it, and that it's not just, you know, sitting down to like put down some thoughts that you had that day about whatever topic, but that it's like, there's the feeling, there's the subject, there's the vibe, there's the cadence, there's the line breaks, there's the like flow. Like, what does it sound like out loud? Like, there's so many different aspects. Not that all poets approach their craft the same way, but I think it is interesting to hear somebody talk about the work that goes into poems. And then for that person to also say that what they love most about poetry is that it can really be magical if you just sort of let it happen to you.
Ooh.
And that you don't need to study. I mean, we should study poetry in the sense that it's important, but like, you don't need to make it a shape, that you can just read through it. And like, whatever it is that you get from it, or that says it speaks to you, like, that's fine. And that it may be different for you and to another person, that you shouldn't be trying to make it, quote unquote, make sense. Like, if you're looking for it to be narrative and have like a clear, like, start, beginning, end, like, you're kind of missing the point. And I think that is, to circle back to what you said, why I also often don't find myself sitting down to just quote, like, in one go, read a whole collection of poems, because it doesn't necessarily make sense for my brain to do so. Like, they're not, if what you're looking for is like, yeah, like the beginning, the middle, and the end, that's not what poetry is. It's one of those things, kind of like a short story collection, where you can, and in fact, it's sometimes to me a more enjoyable experience to just sort of put them down, go back. You don't need to read them in order, like just sort of let them happen to you. And when I stopped trying to like interpret what I thought I was supposed to interpret from a collection of poetry, or like make it make sense, if that makes sense, I started to enjoy it so much more, because it was just like a piece of writing that I could just enjoy and like get something out of, purely because of like what it invoked for me in that time, and not what it's supposed to like represent.
It's a Vanessa's different corner. Kind. Yeah. It's a different kind of reading experience compared to prose, where you, like you said, you're trying to suss out beginning, middle, end, the plot points, pay attention to details, just like let it wash over you. So I think that's maybe sometimes why people are a little hesitant to approach poetry and why we need a poetry month. Just, you know, little reminders to kind of like let go and let poetry. I don't know.
Love that save. But on that note, I think it's really that another like tangent, but like related, is that that is, so if you're having a hard time with poetry and you quote unquote don't get it, first of all, no judgment, because again, I think I very much felt that way and sometimes still do, to be honest, but I'm learning to let go of it. But if you're a person who has trouble with the sort of abstract nature of just poems, then novels and verse could be a really, really great kind of intro into that for you, because they are still a novel. They do still have, you know, not always in a linear way, but like plot, you know, they're telling like a story in a way that you may enjoy, because it can be your introduction to poetry, you know, like that's still telling you like a really specific story. And then that could eventually get you to just start reading, you know, different kinds of poetry. But that's why we wanted to spend some time on that today.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And one of the poetry collections I have actually has like some explainers at the end of each poem, which is really interesting.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, I have not seen that before. But yes, so would you like to go first with your first pick?
Yeah. So I did focus on novels and verse. I had a couple of poetry collections in mind, and then was like, maybe I should check to see when the last time y'all talked about this kind of stuff. And I absolutely had something like 6 picks from like last year's podcast that you did with Tirza and or like recent recommendations. I was like, okay, I'm just going to go with these 3, because as the people know, we like to talk anyway, and I'm sure that won't be a problem. So the first one that I picked is Blood, Water, Paint by Joy McCullough. I am going to issue all the trigger warnings for the discussion of like what this book is about, because it involves sexual assault. And so if that is a subject that is difficult for you and that you're sensitive to, you may want to skip this particular recommendation and book. But so Blood, Water, Paint is not like told entirely in verse, I don't believe. It's been little bit since I read it, but it is told primarily in verse, at least. And it's about an artist who has long intrigued me, the Italian Baroque painter Artemisia Gentileschi. And I'm sure that is not the proper way to say her name, but we're doing
it. Yes, I love Artemisia.
Yes.
I had a moment where I was like, yes.
Right? It's mm-hmm. There's so much. This will send you on like a history rabbit hole, which is what this did for me. But
yes.
So she was the first woman who was accepted to the Florence Fine Arts Academy. Again, she's this fantastic Baroque painter, 17th century Italy. She was a follower of Caravaggio. And she is the artist behind a very famous painting that was actually inspired by one of the same subject by Caravaggio. And it's mm-hmm. Judith beheading Holofernes.
Mm-hmm.
The painting depicts, Judith and Holofernes, who are figures from the apocryphal Book of Judith. And so in that painting, Judith and a accomplice are holding down a struggling Holofernes as Judith slices into this dude's throat with her sword. It is bloody and brutal and alive in a way that really beautiful paintings, are. And it's also mm-hmm. sort of a self-portrait. So this is when the book focuses on Artemisia's story, which is when she was 17. Her mother had died. Her father is a painter. She was coming into her own talents and was looking for mentorship. And so she started to study under this instructor named Agostino Tassi. And at the tender age of 17, he raped her. And her father helped her. Her father pressed charges because at the time, a woman could not do so. So this book takes us through this heart-wrenching story from her early years when she is grieving, the loss of her mother. And she's trying to figure out her life. She's coming into that skill. She seeks this guy out only for him to turn around and this, awful betrayal.
Mm.
So the book then covers the trial that ensued, which prepare for feelings. It goes about as well as you can expect a thing like this to go for a woman in the 17th century, but it is particularly bad. She literally sustains torture as part of the trial, for them to quote unquote prove she's telling the truth. It's just awful.
Ooh.
And so Gentileschi decides to fight back the only way that she can in the aftermath. I mean, she's illiterate. She's disenfranchised and just all of the things, agency taken away. And that's with her paintbrush. And she paints not just this painting, but another that by all accounts are very much a self-portrait. And this book is about her story. It's basically watching her go from her early life up until this awful moment and how she chooses to kind of, get back at him per se, because he did a thing that's unforgivable and maybe not that you can ever really get justice for. But it is powerful to watch her turn all of that pain into some really, really, really impressive art. There's paintings that exist like this, but of this particular subject matter, but she did something different where the servant is very much an accomplice. And I said, mm-hmm. if you just go look out the painting, it is vivid. You can see that it is the moment when the sword is going into this dude's neck and his eyes are bulging. So you can tell he's very aware of what's happening. And the book, somehow the fact that it's told in verse made it more digestible for me, because this is often a trigger thing for me.
Yeah.
I don't often read books that contain this kind of subject matter if it's graphic. But there's something about the novel in verse quality. She, McCullough is also the author of, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on this book, but it had to do with Shakespeare.
Shakespeare's Girls or something.
I'm blanking. We'll put the name in the show notes once I can remember it. But it was a book that I think either Tirza or you talked about last year during a National Poetry Month. It just has this really, really, really particular talent for taking these stories and bringing them to life through poetry. And I've thought about this book for a long time. It actually took me a bit to get through it when I first read it, but it has stayed with me so long, so I knew I wanted to talk. Yes, Enter the Body, that is the name of that book. So anyway, if you are prepared to read about this difficult subject but also to learn a lot about this really, really just talented and formidable woman from history, please pick this up. That again is Blood, Water, Paint by Joy McCullough.
Oh my god, I had a moment. I think I was taking some community college classes when I was still in high school, and one of them was art history.
Oof.
And I got to the Baroque period.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite period of art, European art, is Baroque and Caravaggio.
Same.
And Artemisia. She was my girl. I went down the rabbit hole. I was like, this is what they look at how they massacred my boy.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what they did to my girl. And that is one of my favorite paintings ever. I forgot some of the origins of the characters in the painting, but I knew her story.
Yeah.
And so I did not know this is what this book was about. Oh my God.
It's, you'll learn a lot. I almost went and gave y'all like the full biblical like summary of like who, but I was like, Vanessa, talk about the book. But yeah, again, that's why you should read it, because it gives like a background, and you, I believe, will find yourself like me, like going down and looking up them Wikipedia pages for all these things, and you'll just learn more and more and more. But this, like, Caravaggio himself was also, anyway, tangent, like, wild figure who at one point had to, like, flee because he did some bad things.
But I didn't know about him.
Don't let anybody tell you art is boring, basically.
Oh, no.
Never has been, never will be, but yeah. So, anyway.
Art and writers. Ovid was banned, if you want to take it way back in the day. They got it popping back. They were into some things. Yes, that sounds amazing. I also have... I think it was Tears of Who recommended, yes, Joy McCullough's other book, and that's also on my list. So Joy be doing the doggone thing.
Yeah,
like that sounds amazing. All right, so my first book is Poemhood: Our Black Revival by Amber McBride. Well, let me say, edited by Amber McBride, Erica Martin, and Taylor Bias. Now, this is a collection of poems by a wide range of Black authors. Poets, really. And if you are into mythology and fairy tale like stories, which is kind of like a nice segue, kind of ish related to what you said, Vanessa, the book you mentioned. So this gives a wider range of lore to pull from, to read about. In the intro, it basically talks about how we in the West, we all know stories like Cinderella and Rapunzel. And, you know, we know about Greek mythology, biblical stories, stuff like that, which are, of course, all great and fun things. But it's also really cool to read about other lore. And this collection includes poems that tell about African and Black American lore and fairy tales and daily life and all that good stuff. There are characters like Anansi, which little divergence, side note. If you watch the adaptation of American Gods by Neil Gaiman, did you happen to watch that?
I did not, but I've been meaning to, and I know what you're going to say, though.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, Orlando, yes, Jones played Anansi, the spider, the trickster, or in the show, he was called Mr. Nancy, and he was amazing. Disclaimer, though, I heard the show, you know, went down a little rails a little bit in later seasons. It got a little dicey. I liked the first season. I didn't watch the rest of them. But Orlando Jones as Anansi, like, oof, when they on the ship, good Lord. Ooh. Anyway, so another cool aspect of this collection is how they have these older poems juxtaposed against newer ones. So there are poems by people like Gwendolyn Brooks, who was the first Black person to be awarded a Pulitzer Prize for her poetry. You have poems by authors like Gwendolyn Brooks, like I just said, Audre Lorde, Erica Martin, who is one of the editors, Tony Keith Jr., who, if we have time, I have a memoir in verse by him that I'm going to talk about later, again, if we have time.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of other, Kwame Alexander, so many others. So you have poems on living. It's like divided into chapters. There's a section on God, but it's spelled G-A-W-D. You know, put a little funk on it, a little spice on it. There's a chapter titled Haunting Water, one titled Magical. And another thing, this is the collection I was talking about, where after each poem, there's a little info about the poem that might help readers to understand what it means. Like, if you do want a deeper understanding, again, this is like also educating on some of these aspects of Black life, fairy tales, lore, and all those things that people might not know about. Like, I didn't know. I always say I'm two different types of Black. I didn't know some of these things in here. So, you know, it's to educate the people. I like having backstory. So it's like, yes, let the poems wash over you and speak through and to you, right? But also get a little history, sis. Like, and also some of the explainers also give a little inspiration, like they talk about the author's inspiration in writing them in some cases. So it's a really cool collection. I like it. Again, that's Poemhood: Our Black Revival by Amber McBride, Erica Martin, and Taylor Bias.
I'm really glad you brought that collection up, because the one thing and correct me if I'm wrong, and if you readers, listeners, if y'all have recommendations for this, I'd be very open to them. The one thing I run into with selecting books to talk about today, at least when you're focusing on novels and verse, is that mm-hmm. it feels like topically they're often very heavy.
Yes, least, that's
like
true.
I had like 10 to 12 that I was, you know, parsing through to like talk about. And I was like, I don't know that any of these is ostensibly anyway, not that they don't ever contain bits of it,
yeah.
but they like were not joyful in any yeah. way. Like, again, there's bright moments and there's humor, et cetera, and like personality, but like they were not necessarily like happy fun times, and not that like poems necessarily are either, but there's a lot of like depth in there and stuff that does sound like it's not necessarily like just rooted in like a hard thing. And I yeah. love that, because I was very much not finding that vibe enough. So anyway, if y'all know of like novels and verse, YA or otherwise, but definitely YA, that are lighter topically, I would super love to know those, because that's the one thing I ran up against.
No, that is a thing. That is definitely a thing I've noticed too.
Yeah. So then I do have for my second pick, though, an example of one that does have, it manages anyway to have like some lightness, even though like, again, topically not necessarily like the lightest in focus. And that is When We Make It by Elizabeth Velázquez. So reading poetry on the page is great, obviously, and I do it that way like most often probably. But man, it's real good when you can get it read out loud. And so if you are able to do, or like, that's actually a great way just to incorporate more poetry in your life, really, is to mm-hmm. look for audiobooks of novels and verse and poetry collections. And this is one that I'm so glad Libby delivered the audio version to me before I could deliver the ebook, because it was fantastic. It's performed by the author. It's so good. It's told from the point of view of a young woman named Sarai, who is a first-gen Puerto Rican teen in New York City. She and her sister Estrella are being raised by their mom in the rapidly gentrifying Bushwick neighborhood of Brooklyn. So she walks us through her life. Like, the poems are a little bit stream of consciousness, but she's basically like, they do connect narratively. Like, she is telling us about this period in her life and the whole basically process as she processes and questions the world around her, as she's experiencing, from her family going through housing insecurity to dealing with toxic masculinity, not only in the world but like in her own family and in like her community, the importance of community and her specific community, figuring out the nuances of her Boricua identity, trauma, both new and generational, and like what it means to quote unquote make it. The author gives this beautiful, dynamic, like performance in her beautiful New Yorkian accent, and just gives such body to this character, and like it's kind of like a prickliness, you know, but I don't say that negatively. It's not condescending. Like, I love it about her. It's like she's seen some things and gone through some things and is trying to figure out like, why do we defend this behavior? Why does this? Why do these people get these chances and we don't? Why do people look at us this way? Why am I like hella Puerto Rican to y'all, and then when I go back to Puerto Rico, then I'm not there? You know, all the things that a lot of folks who have that kind of split identity like will go through. It was just one that was so much fun to listen to, because sometimes it's just about like being annoyed with her sister, like her and her sister going to get something to eat. And then sometimes it's, hey, the ride home with that piano teacher changed my life forever because something really bad happened to me, and like people are making me feel like maybe it was my fault. So this also comes with trigger warnings, although I believe all of it is off page. It gets sort of like fade to black. But it's just good. Like, it's just, I mean, that sounds so like, duh, it's good, I'm recommending it. But hearing her read it aloud, it's so, there were times, honestly, where I kind of forgot that it was in verse. And it is. It's just that, again, this is a reminder that like poetry doesn't like look or sound like one thing. It can be lots of different things. And sometimes it is stream of consciousness. Sometimes it tells a story. And like, this was a really beautiful combination of the two. And I immediately went and followed this author on like all the things, because like, if you are ever anywhere near me, like, I want to hear you read. So anyway, loved this so much. It's a very like powerful story. She really nailed like the voice of what it's like to be someone like at that age. So again, that is When We Make It by Elizabeth Velázquez.
I love that. One thing with novels and verse that I've noticed is like you said, they don't necessarily look how some people expect poems to look, but they're just very, they're very concise and efficient in communicating a story, which is like in an amazing way, which is like, you know, poetry is an aspect of poetry. There's language economy in poetry, but I'm always amazed at how it just flows and how quickly and concisely and efficiently they're able to communicate that story. So it sounds like that is the case with When We Make It. And Yeah. And also the author reading that, like, bonus points.
Always.
That brings its all its own thing. Absolutely. Yep. So I'm going to get into my next pick, but first we're going to hear from a sponsor real quick. Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and, oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by KT Hoffman. The pressure cooker of minor league baseball leads to major chemistry in this exhilarating, sexy, and triumphant rivals to lovers debut romance. Gene Ionescu is the first openly trans player in professional baseball. He has nearly everything he's ever let himself dream of. That is, until Luis Estrada, Gene's former teammate and current rival, gets traded to the Beavers. Now, Gene and Luis can't manage a civil conversation off the field or a competent play on it, but in the close confines of dugout benches and roadie buses, they begrudgingly rediscover a comfortable rhythm. As the two grow closer, the tension between them turns electric and their chemistry spills past the confines of the stadium. So this is one of the first adult rom-coms published by a major publishing house centering a gay trans man by a gay trans man. It also has ADHD and anxiety representation and some joyful, heartfelt moments. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by KT Hoffman, for sponsoring this episode. Okay, so we were talking before about how some of these novels in verse will have you in your feelings, honey. So this is one of those that kind of deals with some real stuff. So this is Bright Red Fruit by Safia El Hilo. And this one made me mad because I think, I don't know if it's like a coping mechanism or whatever, but some stuff, like heavy stuff with surrounding certain topics, they make me mad. They just make me mad first and I'll be like sad later. Anyway, that's a me thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this made me mad because there's this girl, Samira. She is a teen living in DC and she is part of the Sudanese American community. I believe her parents immigrated here. She's like first generation. And so this little cretin of a boy lies about her kissing him. And she suddenly has this reputation of being like this loose girl, which is a gross phrase, but it fits here because now it's like she's kind of shunned in the community. Like, a couple things there, obviously. Why are you lying about kissing people? Ew, gross. Secondly, even if she did kiss him, like, that doesn't warrant being shunned, obviously. But people treat her differently and she can't shake this reputation. And she also is not like trying to melt and cower is a wrong word. She's not trying to like overcompensate for it. She still fights back against the strictness of her mother and she challenges things and she's constantly looking to, you know, buck the status quo to find out who she is herself. And so in doing this, she gets grounded one summer. So she's not allowed to really be out of the house like that, except for a poetry workshop that her aunt gifted her. Her aunt paid for this poetry workshop so she can go. All right. So she kind of discovers some things. She's like, all right, this poetry stuff got something to it now, especially slam poetry a little later. But so she meets this guy online. And insert heavy sigh. She meets this guy online and, you know, she's looking for some kind of affection, you know, community support, because again, she's been like ostracized by her community and she was looked down at by family members and stuff like that. And she gets affection from him. But he is one of those, I believe the scientific term for it is F-boys of the controlling variety. F-boy is controllicus.
You just took my joke. Okay.
Were you going to say that?
I was. I had to unmute myself. I was too slow.
Oh my God. Continue. Amazing. Okay. Yes. So that turns into a whole thing. All right. I will leave you to find out what happens, how that shakes out. But let's just say that she finds a new community in exploring poetry and her connection to it and performing and writing poetry and stuff like that. And this new community aids her in just her self-discovery and things like that. So this is kind of like one of those meta things where it's like, it's a novel in verse about a girl writing poetry and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, readers like to read about reading, et cetera.
Yep, we do.
So, So again, that is Bright Red Fruit by Safia El Hilo.
So my next pick is, I was going to say a fail, but that's not fair because this is a great book. But I was so concerned with making sure I didn't give y'all overlap in title that I did not remember to check whether we were talking about the same author.
That's fine.
We are, which is great. That's fine. Yeah. Again, both great. Mm-hmm. But so my next pick is by the same author, and it is Home is Not a Country by Safia El Hilo. So again, not necessarily like happy in subject, but such an important story and a beautiful story in its own way. This is trigger warning for Islamophobia, not so much in anything I'm going to say, but definitely topically. So it's, of course, a novel in verse told in four parts. It's the story of Nima, who is a 14-year-old Muslim immigrant being raised by a single mom in post-9/11 suburban America. I don't remember if they specify where. Their country they're from isn't named, but I remember, if I'm correct, well, now I know for sure because of the book that you just talked about, and you talked about the author, that the cues are all being that it points to Sudan. Mm-hmm. So she is living a very, what in Spanish we call the ni de aquí ni de allá experience that's familiar to so many immigrants, like not from here, not from there. Like she's feeling kind of torn and caught in that, you know, hyphen where her and her mother came to the U.S. for this better life. And now that they're here, you know, life ain't been no crystal stair, basically. Mm-hmm. And Nima feels, again, caught in that in between. She's bullied in school for speaking, you know, with an accent, and gets made fun of even more because her mom wears a hijab and people are, you know, racist and terrible. And for she gets bullied for the fact that her family's very obviously poor. Like, she just doesn't have a great experience, you know, of life in this place that was supposed to represent a meaningful shift in, like, opportunities and quality of life. She does have one lifeline, and that's her neighbor and only friend whom she can confide in. But then the rug is pulled out from under her when tragedy strikes and he's no longer around to, you know, give her that same comfort and friendship. And so Nima is sort of left reeling. I'm intentionally not saying like too much more about it because it's definitely one of those that you should kind of explore for yourself. Again, there is a trigger warning for Islamophobia. But the theme that I thought was really interesting about the book and the way that this novel in verse is told is it contains these like kind of light fantastical elements, and it's this recurring theme though of Nima seeing herself as a shadow of like the girl she could have been, quote unquote, because she knows from the beginning, and this is a thread that's like woven throughout, that like she wasn't supposed to be named Nima, she was supposed to be named Yasmin. And so she has quite literally created like a whole persona and like other life path out of that person, and like explores this throughout the book, like, you know, would have, could have, should have, and like my life would have been so different. And like, again, kind of personifies Yasmin into this person that she compares herself to, even though it's, you know, just quote unquote a name. And then having to come to this reckoning about not only accepting like that you are who you are, but fighting pretty hard, like, you know, tooth and nail for that to be okay, not just for your own self-acceptance, but for other people to accept you, is a really beautiful journey, though not necessarily, you know, an easy read. So I would love to read Bright Red Fruit now. I mean, talked about this book, but just the title alone, Home is Not a Country, is, I think, just a sentiment that a lot of us are coming to at least think about more deeply these days for a variety of reasons. And this, was just a stark reminder just of like what post 9/11 America has been like for so many people. So. Again, Home is Not a Country by Safia El Hilo, which I definitely just said in a Spanish accent. I did not mean to.
I was, I was like, wait, should I have said it like that?
No, that I have a habit. Oh my gosh. Ugh, sorry. I did not mean to be disrespectful.
No, that might be. Now I'm doubtful. It sounded nice though, either way.
Thank you. Tell us about your next pick.
Yes. So before I get to the next pick, we have one more word from our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. Let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon Publishing. So I got a story with a little Old West debauchery, if you want to get a little messy. So there is a city steeped in the Old West mess. And in the city, a reporter is following every lead to a dangerous place, one that could bring him glory and fame or end his life. New York Times bestselling author Robert Dugoni is back with a gripping new thriller of corruption, vice, and murder set in Depression-era Seattle. It's about a reporter covering a hot murder trial who soon learns nothing is what it seems. The story could make his career if he lives to write about it. You can learn more at amazon.com/A Killing on the Hill. So yes, A Killing on the Hill by Robert Dugoni is what you need to pick up if you are into some Depression era danger in Seattle. It's a city of big dreams and dark ambitions, and this reporter gets caught up in the muck. So make sure to check it out, and thanks again to Amazon Publishing for sponsoring this episode. One last note on the accent stuff. Like when you say words with a Spanish accent, I'll be thinking like, oh, like how if I need to say that word, I'm like, it sounds so bland when I say it. It's just like, this means some kind of, I'm like, ooh, because I'm hearing myself say it. Yeah, little Saison. Like, you know, it don't sound right.
Little Saison sounds like the name of an up and coming rap star.
Yes.
But you know, let's
fine. Little Saison. You hear his new,
his EP?
His new money, Gucci.
But we digress.
So, speaking of fun things, just making it a little lighter.
Yes, please.
So, on Wednesdays, we wear pink. If that means something to you, you are probably a millennial. Or Gen Z, because, you know, they had a little remake.
The Renegade Rap Train, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but there, I didn't know these. There's like a little series of books where Ian Dosher rewrites like these classic like teen pop culture phenom stories in the style of William Shakespeare. So this particular one. Yes. I'm like, how did I not give this to me now? I'm saying, and also the note. Okay, let me say what it is first. William Shakespeare's Much Ado About Mean Girls by Ian Dosher, illustrated by Kent Barton. So it's like, it's everything you need. And I will say, I got the ebook version. I also got the audiobook version. And definitely, if you, I think the audiobook version is so good. Like, you could read it. Shakespeare, I think, is meant to be. It's meant to be.
Well, it was for the stage, right? Yeah,
exactly. It's for the stage. If you can't get it on the stage, then like
at least
audibly,
like performed aloud. Yeah, exactly.
Is the next best. Yeah, because I started to read the ebook, and I was like, "Ooh, this is, you know." I'm like, I'm getting through it, but hearing it is so much better. So it follows the familiar story. You know, Katie comes from Africa with her, you know, researcher parents or whatever. She goes to the school, and you know, she was previously homeschooled, and she has to adjust to this new you know, social environment. People ask her, you know, why she's white, because she's from Africa. And all the jokes are still there. There are so many great jokes. And I feel like it kind of like with 10 Things I Hate About You, I would feel like most of these jokes have still, like, even when they're racial, they're still done well, where it's not like, you know, punching down. It's still like, it's goofy, it's funny, it's making fun of, you know, certain stereotypes and things in a way that doesn't feel harmful. And it's funny. It's told. So this really imitates Shakespeare's style. It's in iambic pentameter. And it's like, I think it'd be such a fun thing to either like rewatch Mean Girls or watch it for the first time if you haven't seen it. And then listen to this on audiobook, especially like if you're into like Shakespeare stuff. This is a fun thing. This is very fun.
This is great.
Right? There's another one for Clueless.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so the series is called the Pop Shakespeare series.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two that are at least so far are Get Thee, Back to the Future, and The Taming of the Clueless, in which they have like the cover of it is literally a, you know, Alicia Silverstone a Cher lookalike, except that like the iconic yellow plaid is very much in like cut like an Elizabethan gown, and she's wearing a ruff. It's
I love that cover.
Don't treat yourself to that cover. It's great.
I love that cover. I want that as like a poster. I was gonna do that one for this episode, but I couldn't get it in audiobook anywhere. So I was like, let me do Mean Girls. I love them both. Mean Girls is more so like my generation's Clueless. Yeah.
For sure.
You know, so, but yes, check out this series. It's fun. Like, and it really, it does a pretty good job of speaking like Shakespeare. I was about to, there was a joke at the tip of my tongue that was said in the Shakespeare. I cannot think of it. I should have written it down. I'm sorry. Check this apology. Out, an audiobook, or get it from Audible or whatever. Like, wait, get yourself on a wait list. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. Oh, so, again, this is a William Shakespeare's Much Ado About Mean Girls by Ian Dosher, illustrated by Kent Barton.
Yay. Do you want to maybe hit us a little bit with your bonus pick to wrap us up here?
Oh, yeah. So I have a couple of bonus picks that I'm not going to go super into detail for, just because of time. But I have one by Tony Keith Jr., who contributed to the first pick I mentioned, which is Poemhood, Our Black Revival. So his book, How the Boogeyman Became a Poet, is about, it's basically a memoir in verse, and in it, he talks about growing up a black kid and a gay kid, his struggles with dealing with homophobia and racism, and like the boogeyman of the book is like after his various identities. He's a first generation college student, so he has to navigate those waters kind of by himself. So it gets into that. The second one I have is Just Another Epic Love Poem by Parisa Akbari. And this is a bit of a cheat. It's not fully like in verse. There's a lot of prose in it, but it has poetry. It's basically about these two friends, Mitra and Bea, and they become besties and they start writing in this thing they call, not thing, it's a book, but they just call it the book. And it's like this, you know, worn out moleskin journal that they've been writing in since they were 13. They're writing like this epic poem and they keep adding to it. And as they experience life and, you know, become themselves, they add, you know, more and more. But here's the thing. So one of them starts to like the other. And then it's like,
ooh, yes.
Yeah. You know, you see that little mess, that little delicious messiness that develops. So it's like, how do I tell my best friend who I write poetry with on a regular basis? We've been writing for the past 5 years in this book. We've been writing poetry. Like, how do I tell her that I love her? So, yes. Again, that is Just Another Epic Love Poem by Parisa Akbari.
We truly covered a lot of random ground while also talking about poetry. And that is what the people came for, I hope.
That's what the people want. We aim to please. So Yeah, I feel like that's all we got today. Like you said, yeah. That was enough. We did our best. We got some stuff popping.
We very much proved the point that like poetry is not one shape size fits all with these recommendations alone. And so, yeah, if you guys have other recommendations for us, especially, again, stuff maybe that's lighter topically, I'm very in the mood for that these days. You can send that to us, heywayabookriot.com.
Yes.
That's all for us. And
thank you for tuning in this week. Please leave feedback about the show on Apple Podcasts to let us know how we're doing and to help others find us. You can email us, as Vanessa just said, at heyya@bookriot.com. Don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and all the bookish things. Thanks again to today's sponsor for helping make the show possible. And thanks to our awesome audio editor, Caitlin Brame. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm still on Twitter, technically, @Erica_EZE_. And Vanessa, how about you?
Yes, I am on the sinking ship as well.
it's going down in flames.
Starting to maybe play around with threads. But anyway, Instagram and Twitter at Buenos Dias SD, where the Buenos Dias, the Dias is spelled like my last name.
Nice. All right. We will see you again in 2 weeks with a full episode. Until then, happy reading.